Welcome to a Talk Nation radio special. I'm Dori Smith.
Israel is doing its best to alienate public opinion and to make itself seem like a state that is neither legitimate nor acting rationally.
We're providing news, updates, and analysis on the continuing story of Israeli Defense Force attacks on humanitarian aid workers on the Free Gaza Flotilla. This time we're joined by UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights, Richard Falk. First, Frank Barrett of the Russell Tribunal on Palestine comments on the Israeli attacks. Activists have been poring over footage from live video cameras showing part of what happened as Israeli commandos rappelled down onto the Turkish vessel, shooting passengers. Israelis are claiming that the passengers are responsible. Their footage, too, is being scrutinized. But both their actions and their explanations are being heavily criticized internally in Israel and by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon and others at the UN, as well as world leaders, former U.S. presidents and members of the Group of Elders Nobel laureates. The White House is still reviewing evidence, according to U.S. President Barack Obama, who has expressed regret about the casualties. Humanitarians from all over the world have had to scrutinize video as a way of identifying casualties, Israel not providing even minimal details about who has died and who has been wounded. Frank Barrett has friends on these vessels. We asked him to comment first on the lack of information.
I mean, we've been sort of running around all day to try to find out actually who was killed, who was injured. Whoever was killed or injured, it's obviously a very, very sad day. I've just recently heard in the last 15 minutes that, the people I personally knew on the boat, so Fintan Lane from Ireland, Eva Yasievich from UK, Poland, were actually fine. At least they're not, again, this is not confirmed, but apparently they are not dead or injured. And so 30 to 50 activists have been taken to Beersheba, in southern Israel, so a jail in southern Israel. They refused to sign a sort of deportation letter, and they've had no access to lawyers or no access to their consulate or embassy. Some other activists that have agreed to sign a sort of speedy deportation letter are held in tents in Ashdod, awaiting for deportation back to their respective countries. But again, no list of dead or injured. We don't even know the actual number of dead or injured yet.
And there were two ships, though, that were given to understand two were boarded, and we don't know what the attacks might have looked like on the European vessel, the yes. Turkish one, of course, just the scene of absolute carnage.
Yeah, that's the thing. Again, the Israeli government has been doing what it's very good at, which means a total media blackout. So all the information, the media has been focused on the IHH Turkish boat, the big boat. We know the European campaign to end the siege boat was also attacked. I mean, all the boats were attacked, but I mean, we know like some were very violently attacked, like the big IHH boat, and some other ones, smaller ones, I guess, less resistance was felt, so maybe less violence was used as well. But there were in total six boats. We know that the six boats have been sort of captured and taken to Ashdod port Ashdod port. We don't know what happened on the other boats. I mean, the only live footage we had, video footage, was on the IHH boat. We don't know what happened on the other boats. I'm sure everyone was very roughly treated. That's a no-brainer. But we don't know what happened on the other boats, and we don't know much else, really. I've just had, thanks to Twitter, an update saying that from the Free Gaza movement, saying we've just received news from the Israeli Ministry of Foreign Affairs that Ambassador Edward Peck is fine and on his way to New York. So very, very hard. I've emailed Israeli journalists that I know in Israel. I've emailed physicians for human rights in Israel. Very, very hard to know how many people died, who is injured, how badly injured they are, and exactly what happened.
And Frank Barrett, we know that a lot of what Israel has been engaging in the last decade or so has been under discussion anyway by international humanitarian aid groups. Mm. What do you think this shocking news is doing right now to their plans for the year? Because I know a lot of people hoped that they might see some progress toward peace talks, and it just wasn't forthcoming. Now, with this happening...
People say, though, like sort of pro-justice, pro-Palestinian activists are getting paranoid, but you really got to wonder if Israel won peace, because every time, you know, the proximity talks between the Israeli and the Palestinian, which have been very hard to restart, and Obama had to sort of, you know, lie down on his stomach in front of the Israeli, prime minister to actually restart those proximity talks that have restarted, what was it, about 2 weeks ago, and now this happened. So, I mean, Mahmoud Abbas hasn't said yet if he's going to stop the proximity talks, but it looks very likely that in the next few days, Mahmoud Abbas will announce that due to what happened, the proximity talks will be suspended. So it looks like, I think Noam Chomsky or Norman Finkelstein call this, anytime sort of there's a peace offensive from Palestine, Israel reacts with a really violent action or something to make sure that, you know, the talks are getting stalled. And again, it looks like after Gaza in 2008, 2009, after the Dubai sort of targeted assassination squad, and now this, it looks like Israel is trying very hard not to have any peace talks happening and not to have progress happening. But again, it might just be me, you know.
Well, some have called this a provocation on Israel's part. Interesting, because originally the Israelis were using that language about these aid ships and calling them a political provocation, but saying too that this was just a media stunt. And so one has to wonder why they arrived with commandos.
I mean, exactly. And actually, the goal of the flotilla, there was, you know, various organizations with their own political agendas. You know, IHH is different from Free Gaza movement, that is different from the European campaign to end the siege. But they had agreed to sort of do this all together for more impact. I mean, the thing about the flotilla was bringing humanitarian aid, like much needed humanitarian aid to Gaza, but what also, and this was the most important point, to expose Israel blockade and hermetic closure of the Gaza Strip. So obviously, the goal was twofold, bringing aid, but also exposing that actually it shouldn't be peace activists doing this. It should be, you know, the UN, it should be UNICEF sending boats of humanitarian aid to Gaza. And it was twofold. It was obviously, again, to show that why is it down to us, peace activists, do this. You know, the blockade shouldn't exist. You know, Gazans have got very good natural resources, and they could live quite, you know, they could be quite well off on their own, and with agriculture, etc. We don't have to do this, and because governments are complicit, the UN, the EU, and the US, of course, we have to do this. But that's not our role, and that's what they exposed. But no one expected heavily trained, you know, commandos to board the ships. You know, that's just. I spoke 3 days ago to a friend of mine, Eva, who was on the boat, and she said, you know we're going to be treated very roughly. We know we're probably going to be sent in jail. And she was sort of, you know, expecting this and not scared, but quite apprehensive. But no one could have expected sort of paratroopers to, I don't know, start shooting live ammunition at people, you know.
And it seemed almost as if, you know, watching the videos as they were coming in, and we were seeing them live, you know, on some of these blogs, some of these Twitter sites, you could access them. Also, Al Jazeera has been running them. Press TV has been on. They have reporters on board these ships, and they've been sending back chilling coverage of people under fire, keeping their cameras rolling. I wonder, though, I mean, as people watch this, they may be looking to catch a glimpse of someone's face that they know and want to know how that person is.
I know, and that's, I mean, again, because of the media blackout, I mean, it's terrible how, I mean, Israel's got to release the name of the killed and the wounded. You know, people are, lots of families around, in Turkey, because it looks like really lots of, actually, Turkish civilians died, are now, you know, waiting for news that Israel is not releasing. Why won't you release news of dead and injured? Again, I mean, Israel sort of government officials have announced 10 people, but most media outlets, so I don't know where they get the information, have announced at least 19 people. So we just don't know anything, really. And And the video footage we got from the web, from Al Jazeera or Press TV, etc., is showing, some of the pictures clearly show sort of Israeli soldiers getting on the boat and starting, you know, firing live ammunition. It also shows, activists fighting back with metal bars, etc. But, you know, in one hand, you know, you get attacked, you fight back, and Israel is not used to this, and that's probably why now it's a shock and say, oh, they fought back with, like, metal bars, etc., because normally Israel carries its massacres and no one, you know, fights back. So when people fight back, it's a bit of a shock for Israel, and instead of, you know, responding proportionally, they start killing people, and that's just incredible, yeah.
When I first looked at the videos, my gut reaction was, oh my God, they started shooting, and people were taking cover, running, trying to get away. And then it almost seems as if every time someone would try to stop this, they would be shot. Now, I don't know if that was my imagination or not. You know, we tend to read into these things.
Yeah,
but
of course.
It did seem as if perhaps when some of these shots were fired, you know, it would have been people coming forward to try to help.
I entirely agree with you. I mean, we got to take those videos very carefully because we don't know, you know, I mean, anytime an army release a video and say, look, and, you know, spread it around the media, you know, it only shows you what it wants to show you, and it only shows you the sort of, you know, army view of what happened. So those videos, again, I've seen this one from an helicopter when you see sort of black dots and white dots running around. So who's who? Who's shooting who? And actually, this sort of is secondary, you know. The main event is highly trained military commandos boarded a ship in international waters. So, again, illegal acts. You cannot board a ship in international waters. Boarded a ship carrying a Turkish flag, so which means that on the Turkish boat, Turkish law was applying. So it's pretty much like Israel actually, you know, went to Turkey and killed 9 civilians or more, you know, on Turkish soil. So it's just a blatant violation of international law, even before we can start talking about who shoot who, and that's secondary, you know, who shoot who. I mean, we know who died. If you look at the facts, 10 to 20 people died. Maybe a few Israeli soldiers got bashed with metal bars, but we know, again, it's like the Gaza story once more, you know, 1,400 died. Who started who, in a way, we don't mind, you know. It's the facts are, you know, speak for themselves. And the fact that Israel boarded an aid flotilla, just imagine if this had happened anywhere else, you know, in the Persian Gulf or in Somalia. You know, most governments now would be like in, you know, war room and preparing emergency meetings on how to respond to this and send the Navy there. Because it's Israel, it's all, again, incredible double standards being applied. So that's why sort of public pressure is important. People need to be out in the street. People need to contact the MPs, to contact the media to in the next few days, and to make sure that the people that are now stuck in jail in Israel are being, you know, have access to their lawyer and are being released and brought back to their country safe and well.
Well, I think, too, that we have to look at who was on the vessel. This Turkish vessel that was attacked first, why was it targeted first? And also, Israel was announcing its plans, sending this these naval warships out to sea to surround these vessels that were clearly identifying themselves as humanitarian aid. And then questions have been raised about the whole fact that the missing equation here is, why not negotiate for delivery of aid so that you defuse the entire thing instead of having this confrontation at sea with humanitarian aid workers?
Yeah, I mean, if we know the Israeli government doesn't know diplomacy, and, you know, it's been proven, like, many, many times, like in the last, like, more than 60 years now, that, you know, diplomacy is not their forte. You know, they know about guns and bombs. They don't know about diplomacy. And, yeah, so that's what happened with this flotilla again. I mean, it was bound to happen, and we had sort of contacted, you know, most governments with citizens on board of the boats and asked them to contact the Israeli embassy to make sure that the flotilla, you know, enters Gaza without any problem and peacefully. Most government didn't do anything about this, so I guess you could call them complicit in what happened, because they could have, you know, a few days ago called Israel and said, look, you know, we've expected the boats, we've checked the boats. The boats were checked by Turkish customs officials, which had, like, metal detectors before entering the boats, so they had no guns. The thing about guns is completely, is a big lie. And please make sure, you know, this gets access to Gaza peacefully. no government took this step, and now, you know, they have to be taken into account.
And so you raise the question of what international leaders have done and have not done, which brings us, of course, to the Obama administration.
Yeah.
And we've been looking at pictures in news reports out of, in fact, Israel, where Rahm Emanuel, President Obama's chief of staff, was in Israel having his picture taken with Benjamin Netanyahu. This was on the 26th. At that time, of course, this whole humanitarian operation was underway. I had a difficult time getting information earlier today from the U.S. State Department. I did phone them to try to find out what I could about what, if any, kind of U.S. response was going to be made. Fred Lash at the U.S. State Department had said they were still formulating, molding various comments that they were getting into a statement, and they were sending, you know, statements that were coming out of the Middle East, where they're having, you know, where they have people based. Statements were coming through to them, and they were forwarding them to the White House and other branches, and then they were going to sort of put it together. Now, there was a long delay. I haven't seen any major announcements from the U.S. State Department, and I'm going to continue to look, and we'll, of course, try to call them back. Have you heard anything about an American response to this?
No, I think I've heard the only I've heard President Obama saying that we need to know all the facts before we can make a statement. And I think that's pretty much everything, you know, the only thing I'd heard from him. We need to know the facts before issuing a statement. So, again, people had a lot of hope, I think, in the new administration, and they've been obviously getting more and more disappointed, you know, about the Middle East and, you know, U.S. foreign policy. I think it proves once more that when it comes to Israel, the U.S., you know, acts completely differently than it acts with any other country, because the facts are pretty clear, you know, and the flotilla was had been announced, had been prepared months ago. Everyone knew it was going to happen. So the facts are clear, really. You don't need to wait and to have an Israeli army investigation that will clear everyone, obviously, before issuing a statement.
Frank Barat, thank you for taking the time to speak with us.
Thanks, Lodori.
Frank Barat of the Russell Tribunal on Palestine. He joined us back in April as well to talk about the tribunal's findings on Israel after testimony was heard about the Israeli occupation of Palestine and war crimes committed during Operation Cast Lead in Gaza in 2009. We also interviewed Nobel Peace Prize winner Myreed McGuire, who was a participant in the Russell Tribunal. She served as a member of the jury in deciding on charges of the European Union's complicity with Israel in violations of the rights of Palestinians and the ongoing occupation. Myreed McGuire is on one of two new Free Gaza vessels that have set sail for Israel anew. They're determined to make it this time. Joining us next is Richard Falk. He's professor of international law emeritus, Princeton University, and special rapporteur on occupied Palestinian territories for the United Nations Human Rights Council. Richard Falk, just explain what conditions are like in Palestine and especially in Gaza.
Yeah, it should be understood that Gaza has been one of the most crowded, poorest areas in the world for a long time. Even if there was no problem with Israel, even if it was just a matter of dealing with a small society that is suffering from widespread poverty. But starting in the middle of 2007, Israel took the unprecedented and unlawful step of imposing a blockade on the 1.5 million Gazan residents that restricted to subsistence levels the flow of food, medicine, and fuel. And the result has been a continuous deterioration in the physical and mental health of the population in Gaza. It's reached such a deplorable level now that the chief UN relief official, John Ging, just days ago called on the UN to send its own ships carrying humanitarian supplies under a UN flag, which would have been a comparable initiative to that taken by this peace convoy that was attacked a day ago.
Can you just talk about the problems that the United Nations has in general, overall, in working within the confines of Israeli policy?
It is an unfortunate aspect of the approach taken by Israel to its role as the occupying power of these Palestinian territories. I personally have experienced this defiance of the international community when they detained and expelled me at the end of 2008 when I was trying to complete my obligations as special rapporteur to assess what the conditions were on the West Bank, Gaza, and East Jerusalem. And they have consistently made it difficult for the UN to perform its humanitarian functions, even in the conditions that exist in Gaza. And if it wasn't for the UN presence there, one would have had a horrible situation of death and disease and malnourishment. As it is, there's widespread child anemia reported to be as high as 40% of children under the age of 12.
You can well imagine that these hundreds of people taken into custody by Israel are going through some pressure. And you've had that experience of having been detained by Israel. What are they going through? How big a problem that the Israeli government has not been forthcoming with information about who is detained, what condition they're in, and who's been harmed by bullets?
This is not only a departure from good practice, particularly by a supposedly democratic country, but it also appears to be vindictive toward the families of these detained people who have no idea whether their loved ones are in good shape or even alive. And it appears to be part of a very cynical Israeli effort to control the narrative about what actually occurred at sea, because the early eyewitnesses that seemed quite credible reported that the violence was initiated by the commandos landing on the Turkish ship and preceding even touching ground, that they were firing from the air and that individuals on the ship were killed. And then, only then, did they try with their very primitive weapons, you would even call them weapons, primitive materials, to defend themselves. And for Israel to claim self-defense when it initiated an unlawful use of violence on the high seas is an incredibly implausible legal and moral kind of argument. Self-defense, if it applies at all, is something that can be invoked by the passengers of the ship subject to this kind of attack.
What should people concerned about this be doing? I know in the United States, there has not been much from the State Department or the Obama administration about these individuals that have been detained by Israel, some of whom are American citizens.
It is rather alarming that the U.S. government seems so intimidated by pro-Israeli congressional and lobbying forces that it's not able to even do what one would expect a government to do in a situation of this kind. And it's a very strange silence in view of the fact that there are Americans involved, that there were deaths and injuries, and that families have, there's no justification for not informing them. And Israel is doing its best to alienate public opinion and to make itself seem like a state that is neither legitimate nor acting rationally. One of the puzzling features of this whole situation has been the degree to which Israel has seemed to act in a way contrary to its own national interests and its own practical goals. For instance, it has alienated, probably permanently, Turkey and the Turkish public by the way in which it attacked the Turkish ship in the convoy. And Turkey was its only strategic friend in the region. made it very awkward for the United States and the European countries to continue to give such strong support to Israel. It's isolated the U.S. and generated even greater resentment for the way in which we've handled the relationship to the Palestine-Israel conflict. And finally, it's aggravated and already alienated world public opinion in such a way as to probably greatly intensify the campaign for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, which already was spreading globally and assuming the kind of character that the anti-apartheid campaign had reached in the late 1980s and contributed to the downfall of the racist regime in South Africa. So it's almost as difficult as it is to explain the disrespect of international law and the defiance expressed toward the United Nations. Even harder, in a way, is to explain the loss of practical intelligence in the conduct of Israeli foreign policy, because there seems to be nothing to be gained by doing what they've done. You could imagine that if they had some serious security concern that was at stake, one might argue that it was a gamble that they needed to take to upset public opinion. But here, these were unarmed people carrying humanitarian assistance. They could have been escorted to an Israeli port if Israel was determined not to let the supplies get delivered. And so, it's very troublesome when a government doesn't seem to have serious contact with political reality, because then it's capable of doing almost anything.
Well, CNN's Rick Sanchez asked one of his guests if he thought the people on board the Free Gaza flotillas had tried to stage this intentionally as a way to provoke Israel and call attention to their cause. In that sense, Israel has long refocused all blame onto Palestinians.
It is true that there is that kind of pattern, but I think it's very implausible to think that the people on the ships provoked the incident, because their real objective was to demonstrate that civil society could deliver this humanitarian relief when governments were unwilling to challenge the Israeli blockade and the UN was not able to do anything to relieve the suffering of the people in Gaza. They had no illusions that this delivery of 10,000 tons of humanitarian supplies would alter the fundamental situation. It was always intended, I believe, as a symbolic way of showing that the people of the world cared enough to take this risk and go on this mission, even if the governments were not so prepared. And so I think it's very unlikely, almost impossibly unlikely, that these boats were interested in provoking Israeli military attack. That seems far from what I understand the realities to be.
Richard Falk, thank you so much for joining us.
Well, thank you.
Peter Falk is Professor of International Law Emeritus, Princeton University, and Special Rapporteur on the Occupied Palestinian Territories for the United Nations Human Rights Council. For Talk Nation Radio, I'm Dori Smith. This program is produced in Storrs, Connecticut, and syndicated with Pacifica Network. TalkNationRadio.org for transcripts, audio, and discussions. TalkNationRadio@gmail.com if you'd like to write to us. Our music is by Fritz Heed.